This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Discretion is advised. Love Line with Dr. Chris starts.
3, 2, 1.
Now.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I am sitting in for Dr. Chris. Well, he is out and on the town doing a lot of exciting things, but I am honored to be here with you. For those of you who don't know me, I am a licensed psychotherapist. You may know me, or at least my face, not my voice, from VH1 Couples Therapy with Dr. Jen. Also, Family Therapy with Dr. Jen. Some of you have heard me on the radio, on the Dr. Jen Show for many years, on other radio stations. I'm also an author. I've written a book called The Relationship Fix, Dr. Jen's six-step guide to improving communication, connection, intimacy. I've also written some parenting books, Super Baby, 12 Ways to Give Your Child a Head Start in the First 3 Years, and The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. I have a column in InStyle magazine that comes out every Wednesday called Hump Day with Dr. Jen, where we talk about sex and relationships, and sometimes it gets very racy. And look, we can get a little racy around here. From what I understand, we can really talk about everything. I am ready to take your calls. My number is 833-568-3001. That's 833-568-3001. I'm a mother of twins. I am in a relationship. I have a lot of experience. But more importantly, I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and I'm here to answer your questions about anything and everything that is on your mind. Nothing is off limits. We talk sex, love, relationships, career, parenting, whatever you want. Again, the number is 833-568-3001. And I'm going to start out by talking a little bit about trust. I did a post the other day that was a quote from my book, The Relationship Fix, where I was talking about trust. And I got a lot of big reactions because I think that trust is such a hot button issue. And what a lot of people tend to think of when it comes to trust is just fidelity / infidelity. But trust is so much bigger than that. And when trust is broken, it's not just about infidelity. Of course, that's the obvious one. And that's such an incredibly painful one. Whatever your agreement is in the relationship, whether you have an open relationship, a closed relationship, there are agreements that we have. And when they are broken, it is such a violation. And it is such a, it's just so incredibly painful. But I'm talking a little bit first about kind of the more subtle things when it comes to trust. We tend to test our partners. We tend to test the people we're in relationships with. We tend to test our family, our friends, both consciously and unconsciously. And sometimes it's more things like, will you show up for me on a date? As you're getting to know someone, when you make a date with someone, we've all been in that situation where we're like, is this person really going to show up? You know, I don't know about you, but I, in my single days, I had experiences where I was sitting at a bar waiting for someone that never showed up or waiting for someone to pick me up. I remember one guy in particular who happened to be my childhood orthodontist son. But anyway, when we talk about trust, it's also about, will you do what you say? Can I trust you if you say, I'm going to be there to pick you up, or I'm going to be there to support you for something that's really important to you? Will you do what you say you're going to do? And how are you going to act towards me in public? How are you going to act towards me with your friends? That's a trust issue. And sometimes people don't think of that in terms of trust, but it is. It's a vulnerable situation. Are you going to acknowledge we are in a romantic relationship? Or are you going to act like I'm just your pal? Are you going to treat me with respect? Especially if you have been wounded in another relationship where someone didn't treat you with respect, or someone did not treat you in a way that you expected. And by the way, the number here is 833 1-800-568-3001. But also, as a relationship progresses, things get bigger. Those questions about trust get bigger. Are you going to support my dreams? Are you going to commit to me? Are you going to have babies with me? And then, of course, the obvious, are you going to cheat on me? Are you going to keep whatever our commitment is when it comes to monogamy? And it's important to understand that it's not possible to have a meaningful relationship without trust. So often I get people who ask me, well, this person broke my trust. We've been in a relationship for however many years or months or weeks, and they've broken my trust. Can we have a healthy relationship? And the answer is no. Can trust be won back? Yes. Over time, with good behavior, it can be. But there are a lot of things that need to be in place for that healing to take place. And also, the motivation needs to be there. And typically what I see is that when someone has hurt the other person's trust, there are four things that determine the outcome of whether or not that gets worked through or not. The first is emotional capital. What is your history with this person? How many times have they hurt you? How many times have they broken your trust? How much emotional gasoline is in the car before this trust was broken? Second, motivation. And look, sometimes a motivation is healthy, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's the kids. Sometimes it is a business that you have together. Sometimes it is religious beliefs where you feel like, I can't leave this person. That would violate our religious beliefs. And so that can be a motivation. Or sometimes it's money. Sometimes it's that I can't afford to leave. So I'm going to be telling you a few more things when we come back from this break. I'm going to give you number three and number four of what determines the outcome of whether or not people work through violations of trust. You can reach me at 833-568-3001. I'm Dr. Jen Mann, and I am here on Loveline, a licensed psychotherapist ready to answer all your questions.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I am a licensed psychotherapist, and I am sitting in for Dr. Chris for the week. You can give me a call here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I am licensed and ready to take your calls at 833-568-3001. And I was just talking before the break about trust, and I was talking about when your trust is broken, and like I was saying, it's not just about infidelity. That tends to be the first thing that comes to mind. But of course, it includes infidelity, which can be one of the most painful kinds of betrayals that we can experience. And what I was saying before the break is what determines if a couple is actually, or even a friendship, or you and a family member, but what determines whether people are motivated enough to work through a breach of trust is one, emotional capital, like I was saying before the break, your history together. Two, your motivation. Sometimes kids can be a motivation, a business together, a religious reason. And then three is your ability to make amends. And I talk a lot about the four R's. You're going to hear me talk a lot about them this week. And those four R's are remorse, your ability to truly give a remorseful, deep-hearted apology, responsibility, whether or not you fully take responsibility for your actions. And the third is recognition, the third R, that you recognize and are able to hear the pain of the person that you hurt and remedy, that you're able to come up with a plan of action. So then the last thing that determines whether people work through a breach of trust is that ability to rebuild the relationship. Because typically when something goes wrong in a relationship, and especially when it comes to an affair, it's a symptom of a bigger problem. And relationships tend to need to be redesigned and renegotiated after a breach of trust on a lot of different levels. And I'm sure we'll be talking about this issue all week long because trust is such a hot button issue that so many people struggle with. I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I am a licensed psychotherapist. I am here to take your calls about anything and everything, sex, love, dating, relationships, parenting, career, you name it, I am here for you. And now I'm on the line with Josh from Missouri.
Hello.
Hey there, Josh.
Hey. So my question is, do I know or how can I tell when I'm ready to start dating again after my divorce?
And tell me, how long ago was your divorce?
Well, it was, we've been separated for almost a year and a half, and it actually, it's another story that's not finalized yet. He's dragging his heels. So it's not finalized yet, but we are separated.
And it sounds like you would like it to be finalized, but that he's the one that's preventing that from happening.
Correct. I've told him, you know, everything I need to tell him, and I've sent him all of my paperwork, and for whatever reason, he is taking his time. So,
and before you separated a year and a half ago, how much time did you have where you spent realizing, wow, this relationship is coming to an end before you filed?
Oh, gosh, probably, I would say, a good 6 months.
Okay. Because the reason why I ask is because we tend to start to mourn the loss of a relationship while we're in it. And that makes a big difference about your readiness. How are you feeling in terms of your ability to connect with others? Do you feel like you have a lot of grieving still to do? Because you've got basically, if you count the 6 months of grieving beforehand, the year and a half, you've been dealing with this pretty intensely for 2 years. Where are you at in your grieving process?
Right. I'm definitely probably somewhat still in the anger stage. Like I feel more jaded about dating, I guess. And I'm typically not like that.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of like, I would be good to never date again, you know, for a while.
Well, so, look, it sounds like you were very hurt and very betrayed in your marriage. And, and you know, to me, part of the measure of are we ready to date, and it sounds like, you know, given your anger stage, you're probably not quite there. But what I tend to look at is, could you sit at a table with another person and not mention your ex? Can you sit at a table with another person and not cry or scream and yell, which to me are really important factors? And could you actually enjoy another person's company right now, romantically? And I'm not even just talking about sexually. I'm just talking about, are you open to connect? Is your heart open? Because when you're in the anger stage, it's very hard to have an open heart. It's kind of counter.
Yeah, I don't think it. I mean, I really don't think it is. At this, you know, I guess I answered my own.
Yeah. It sounds like you need some more time. And I would really recommend focusing on this anger that you're experiencing. Talk it through in therapy. Do journal about it. Talk to friends about it. Go to the gym. Punch it out. Like, box it out. Mm-hmm. But you need to get it out because it's going to hurt your ability to connect with someone else and also to attract the right kind of partner that is going to have the kind of open heart that you want for your next relationship. I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I'm a licensed psychotherapist here on Loveline, sitting in for Chris, ready to talk to you about all of your issues, whatever is on your mind. Give me a call right now.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I'm sitting in here for Dr. Chris. I am a licensed psychotherapist. You may know me from VH1 Couples Therapy or my book, The Relationship Fix, or my InStyle magazine column, Hump Day with Dr. Jen. I am here tonight to answer all of your questions about anything and everything that is on your mind. Sex, love, dating, relationships, whatever it is. You know the number, 833-568-3001. And I'm on now with Jenny from Los Angeles.
Hi, Dr. Jen.
Hey there.
Hey. So I'm calling because I haven't dated in years and I'd like to start dating again, but I am feeling so cynical about things and I just don't even know where to start.
And what made you stop dating and what made you so cynical?
Because just everyone I was dating was awful, and I just was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of being hurt, and why bother?
And
but
when you say they were awful and you're sick of being hurt, were these like first dates that you were going on and then you're like, ugh, I can't stand this? Or these people you're actually getting really romantically involved with?
A mixture of both.
Okay. And what was your pool of people? Where was it coming from?
I was working as a photographer, and so these were other photographers.
Okay. So it sounds like you just had kind of one pool that you were just looking
yeah.
at work. Okay. Well, a few things. First of all, I do recommend that when you date, I like to think of dating as a pie, that each slice of the pie is a different approach to dating. You know, one might be setups from friends. One might be using the apps. One might be going to singles events. One might be just getting yourself out there with friends, even if it's not a specific singles event, where you just kind of put yourself out there. And so there are a lot of different pieces of the pie. It sounds like the pool that you're fishing in, you're not getting very good fish. And I hate to use that analogy because I'm a vegan, but you know, better analogy, if you went to a restaurant and you kept each meal was bad, would you go back and eat bad meal after bad meal? No, you would try a different restaurant. So let's try to diversify your approach to dating. And then let's also look at, is there anything consistent when you think about all of those people that you dated, that you had these bad experiences? Is there anything that is consistent with them? Are there any commonalities?
Nothing obvious.
Even something not obvious. I'm going to push you to think of the not obvious.
I mean,
because I have a feeling there might be.
They were all kind of full of themselves.
Okay. Would you say they're narcissistic?
I don't think I'd go that far, but yeah.
I mean, not like clinically narcissistic, but like kind of self-focused kind of narcissism stuff.
Yeah, that's fair.
And is that something that you've attracted prior?
Maybe to a degree.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything in your history, and really kind of, I want you to dig deep on this one. Is there anything in your history, your childhood, any familiar people to you who were narcissists or had narcissistic
Ooh.
Features? Maybe a dad, Ooh. A mom, a sister, someone significant in your life that you had a strong bond with.
Not really. I mean, the only thing I can think of is a grandparent
mm-hmm.
who may have had those tendencies, who was a pretty domineering kind of person.
And did you have a strong bond with that person?
No.
Okay. The reason why I ask, and I really want to encourage you to dig as deep as possible on this, and look, maybe there's nothing there, but typically when there's a pattern in our history of what we attract, we're the common denominator. So we have to look at, why am I attracting this kind of person? And a lot of the time, the reason why we attract the same kind of person is there's something from our history that our unconscious is trying to heal. Our unconscious doesn't know the difference between past, present, and future, so it's always trying to heal old wounds in current time. So if you had, let's say, for example, a parent who you felt like didn't give you attention, maybe they weren't a full-blown narcissist, but let's say you had a parent who had to work a lot and was not available to you, that what tends to happen as kids is that we internalize that. And we then go, there's something about me, because kids are egocentric. That's normal and healthy. It's not narcissism. And they go, there must be something wrong with me, that dad is not coming home earlier, that mom doesn't want to spend time with me, even if it has nothing to do with you. And then we tend to take that to our relationships and on some level, very unconsciously, super unconsciously go, wow, something about me is kind of unlovable. And then we find other people who don't give us the kind of attention that we were hungry for as a kid. And then what happens is our unconscious mind goes, it's just like dad or it's just like mom. And if I can make that person give me attention, if I can make that person be less self-focused, I will get to heal this wound. And it means mom or dad was wrong and I can heal and be healthy. So it's a healthy part of us that wants to heal this. But we tend to kind of draw in people that hook into our history in some way. And so just the fact that there have been kind of so many of these makes me wonder if there's something from your history. And a lot of the time, if we can become aware of what that is about our history, make the unconscious conscious, we don't draw in that kind of energy anymore. So I think that
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I think it's worth you exploring. And then the other thing we want to do is we want to help you eliminate more quickly. That now that we know, and you've kind of put it into words, okay, I keep coming across these people who are very full of themselves. What we want to start to do is have a radar go off and maybe even make a list of kind of the red flags that you have seen on previous dates when with people of this kind of personality. So that when you're on that date, you can go, yeah, I don't think this one's for me, and you can exit it as quickly as possible. I'm not a believer in doing a 1 hour, 2 hour date just to be polite. I believe that better we cut our losses and we not waste anyone's time. Life is too short. I remember one time when I was single, I remember going on a date with this guy, and he was a nice guy, but he was just, he was boring. I'm sorry to be mean.
Right,
he was just
boring.
And I remember the drive to the restaurant, he literally was talking about, he was like, oh, what'd you do today? You know, kind of typical date question. He says, I went to the store, I got a new condo, and I bought a rug. I was looking at these Persian rugs, and I couldn't figure out if I wanted the 11 by 15 or the 15 by 17. And, you know, and literally, this guy talked about rugs for probably 30 minutes the entire drive. And I remember I arrived at the restaurant, and I went to the bathroom, and I called my mother, and I said, I don't think I can do this date. I think I'm going to tear my hair. I don't know how much longer I can do. And she's like, you don't have to stay, like, cut it short, leave. And it always kind of stuck in my mind, because I do think that life is too short and that you don't want to waste time on a really bad date. You can do it with dignity. You can do it with respect. You can do it with kindness. You can say, hey, you know, I don't think this is a good match. Or, you know, you can do the old trick of having a friend call you on your cell phone and say, hey, I'm having an emergency. I really need you to pick me up. But I think it's important not to spend too much time. And I also think, Jenny, for you in particular, you've been so spooked, and the less time you spend with that kind of poison, the more optimistic you're going to be about getting back into the dating pool. We want you to have positive experiences. You know, enjoy the company, enjoy the conversation, and if you're not, then get out fast. I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I'm a licensed psychotherapist here on Loveline, filling in for Chris, ready to talk to you about all your issues, and I'll be right back after this break.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I'm filling in for Dr. Chris here on Loveline, ready to take your questions and talk to you about anything and everything that is on your mind. But before we do that, we've got to do sliding into the DMs, brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It is a big sexy world. Explore it with confidence. And I've got a DM here from someone who says, hey, Dr. Jen, I've been with my boyfriend for 4 years. Throughout the relationship, I found my feelings super inconsistent. We go through the highs and lows. We end up having a bad argument prompted by me expressing my observation about weddings in general. He blew up at me, name-calling, and even slightly shoved me before we left together. We kind of resolved it that night, but I'm still very upset about about that whole weekend. I don't know how to move past it. This has also brought to the surface a lot of overarching issues with the relationship. I've set up an appointment with a therapist, but I'm wondering if it's even possible to get back to a good place after such a traumatic event when I have no desire to see or connect with him physically or emotionally. Can one weekend ruin an entire weekend? And the answer, real quickly, is yes. There are certain lines that should not be crossed in a relationship. You mentioned that this is kind of a roller coaster relationship. that you have deeper issues, and there are certain lines it should not be crossed. And I believe that that kind of yelling, name-calling, and physical pushing is one of those lines. And once that has been crossed, we know that it is open to be crossed again, and it tends to make a person feel unsafe in a relationship. And while you can sit down with a therapist, it sounds like you've got a lot of doubts about this relationship that I think are very valid. So, and this has been presented by Trojan Condoms. It is a big, sexy world. Explore with confidence. I'm Dr. Jen, and I've got Mitchell on the phone.
Hey, Dr. Jen. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Hey, Mitchell.
I feel like I know you. I mean, over the years, I must applaud you. You make me feel very comfortable. So I've never called into any show like this before, and it's a little uncomfortable for me. But you're always so candid with people, and you just... you tell it like it is. So I like that.
Thank you, Mitchell.
So my issue may not be as extreme as others, but my girlfriend and I have been together about 18 months. She's a tax attorney, and she was just headhunted with a firm in Chicago. We're based here in Los Angeles. And I think she would be foolish not to go for this. It's a major opportunity. And we've discussed the idea of a long-distance relationship because we are connected like no other in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really, I would never, she said, you know, I will stay for you. And I was like, I would never want somebody to stay for me because that would cause
very
resentment.
Giving.
But in your career, have you seen in your practice long-distance relationships work out? Or is it just something where it just never works? And I'm very, very concerned about it, as is she.
It's a great question.
And we...
It's a great question, and I think it's wonderful that you are encouraging her to take this, even though you have such strong feelings towards her, and it sounds like you feel like there could be a future there between the two of you. But yes, I have seen long-distance relationships work. They're very challenging. It's interesting. I have a regular caller who called me a couple of years ago named Aaron, who called asking a very similar question about can long-distance relationships work, and a couple of years later, after taking my advice, she sent me pictures of her and her now husband when they got engaged. So the answer is yes, but it requires a lot more work. I recommend that couples who are going to do a long distance relationship make sure that they are visiting each other as regularly as they can afford to do it in person. That also, to me, connection, all the studies show that the reason why people have affairs over 90% of the time, actually it's 92% for women and 93% for men. The reason why people have an affair is because of a lack of connection or a combination of a lack of emotional connection and sexual connection. So maintaining that emotional connection is super important, and maintaining the sexual connection when you are able to see each other is also of the utmost importance. So making sure that you do Skype dates, that you talk to each other on a day-to-day basis and night-to-night basis, that you actually prioritize the relationship, that sometimes it means maybe not going out with your friends or not doing something because the two of you have planned a date that had you planned in person, you wouldn't skip out on. So you make sure that you say, okay, you know, and I remember with this particular caller that we talked about doing a candlelit dinner together on FaceTime. That fortunately right now we have a lot of technology that works in our favor, which really helps relationships to happen. So Mitchell, thank you so much for your call. I'm Dr. Jen Mann. This is Loveline. And in the next hour, I'm very excited that I have a guest named Samantha Harris. You probably know her from Dancing with the Stars. She has an amazing book out about how she beat cancer and all of the healthy tips that you need to know. And I will tell you, she was at my house. She's a friend of mine. She walked into my kitchen and she told me something that stunned me that I'm going to share with you. It's something you probably have in your house. I would say 99% of you have this thing in your house and you don't know it's toxic. And I didn't either, but she enlightened me. And in the next hour, she's going to enlighten you too.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I'm a licensed psychotherapist. You may know me from VH1 Couples Therapy or from one of my books, The Relationship Fix, or my column in Style Magazine, Hump Day with Dr. Jen, that comes out every Wednesday offering sex and relationship advice. I am here in this hour talking to someone who is pretty amazing. Her name is Samantha Harris. You probably know her from Dancing with the Stars and Entertainment Tonight. She's an Emmy Award-winning TV host and journalist. She's a certified personal trainer, a nutritional advocate, and a promoter of healthy living. She is an all-around amazing woman and also happens to look really incredible. You can't see her here, obviously, because this is the radio, but she clearly practices what she preaches. In 2014, she had stage 2 invasive breast cancer and was diagnosed at the age of 40. And that inspired her book, Your Healthiest Healthy, 8 Easy Ways to Take Control and Help Prevent and Fight Cancer and Live Longer, Cleaner, Happier Life. And of course, who doesn't want to do that? I know I do. And, you know, who doesn't want to be healthier and live longer? And one of the things to me that's so amazing about Samantha's book is I'm a pretty obsessive researcher myself. I consider myself to know a lot about health, but Samantha kind of blows me away because there's someone who actually may be more obsessive than me. So I want to welcome Samantha to the show. Welcome, Samantha.
Thank you, Jen. This is so fun, like girlfriends hanging out actually on the job.
I know, totally. And here's the thing. The first time I met Samantha, I have to share this story because anyone who has seen Samantha on TV for 5 minutes, whether it's Entertainment Tonight or Dancing with the Stars or any other one of the millions of shows she's on, Culinary Genius, Insider, E! News, Extra, you name it, Samantha's on it. But how many years ago was it
we first met? Age us.
A few decades ago.
We were babies.
Yeah, decades ago.
No kids. It was prior to kids.
Yeah, we were infants.
Yes.
And the first time I met Samantha, she was hosting a radio show with a few other hosts. And I will never forget. And, you know, Samantha has muscles. Samantha's strong, but she's a slender chick. And I will never forget. She was so nervous on the radio. She was shaking like a little fawn. And I remember watching her, and she has blossomed into this amazing Emmy Award winning host. You see her on TV, just like the most confident person. So in addition to health, this is someone who really, I mean, whatever it is, whatever potion you've got, when it comes to confidence and presentation, we all want it.
But thank you. Thank
but
you.
I
yeah,
want to talk
brand spanking new in LA. That was one of my first jobs, this little dinky radio show. It was crazy.
It was pretty wild.
I think I just graduated from Northwestern's journalism school. I was like, I got a gig, Mom! And then, yes. And then it went away very quickly.
But I would love to talk to you. We've come a long way since then.
Yes.
And, you know, you've had a lot of ups and downs, but really the down that inspired all of this book, this amazing book with all of these incredible health tips, is cancer.
Yeah. Yep.
And can you talk to me a little bit about what that was like and how you found it and how it changed your life?
You know, for me, it was so incredibly shocking because I was the, quote, healthy one among my friends and family. The one who was eating the cheeseless pizza and the skinless, boneless chicken breasts and the egg whites and thinking that I was working out for the right reasons in the right way and doing all the things I thought were healthy. And I was, you know, a young mom at 40. I will say 40 is young. My girls were just 3 and 6 at the time. And I decided I would set a baseline to get my first mammogram because that's what you do when you turn 40.
And did you have any history of cancer in your family?
So my dad unfortunately died of colon cancer when he was just 50.
Mm-hmm.
Now, post-cancer for me, post-numerous different genetic testing, we found that there was no genetic link from my cancer to his.
Wow.
And interestingly, his mom had breast cancer, but she was a 30-year survivor, and it was postmenopausal. So often, mine was premenopausal, so oftentimes there's no connection there, too, and they were able to confirm there was no connection through the genetic testing. So there was no reason for, based on heredity, that I should be diagnosed with cancer. And I was so healthy. I was eating well. I was working out all the time. Here I was. And then I went in for this mammogram, but the results came back clear. Clear. Just what I expected, because I'm healthy. I'm young. I'm vibrant. But 11 days after the clear mammogram results came back, I was changing after a workout. And for you ladies listening, you know how this goes. You get that tight sports bra off and you got to move them a little to the left, a little to the right.
Totally.
They do their own sort of soft tissue, soft shoe, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I know that dance.
Yes. And I was like, all right, this feels good. They're out of the boulder holder. And what's that lump? What is that?
Wow. How big was it?
I mean, mean, I want to say it was about the size of a quarter.
Wow.
And I this has never been there before, so I quickly went to see, within the next couple of days, my longtime OBGYN who delivered both my kids. I trusted her more than any other doctor. She did a quick clinical exam, sent me on my way, told me it was nothing. This is what 40 looks like. It's probably glandular, she said. No big deal. And a month later, the lump was still there, went to see my internist. He said the same thing, sent me on my way. And 4 months later, the lump was still there. And that nagging in my gut just kept saying, what is this? If it is truly nothing, let's get in there. Don't just feel at my boobs and go, hey, yeah, it's nothing. I'm good. So that's when I finally saw a surgical oncologist. And after a battery of tests that all interestingly came back, not detecting cancer, needle biopsy, wow, two ultrasounds, an MRI, and then again confirming the mammogram, didn't find the cancer. But the needle biopsy did show some irregular proliferation of cells, which to me as a layman says, isn't that what cancer is? But she said, no, it's not cancer. Good news, bad news. It's not cancer, but I don't know what it is. Let's take it out. And that's when we found out it was not only cancer, but invasive breast cancer.
But it also, to me, speaks to how important it is to listen to your gut. You know, look, I'm a shrink, so I always come from that perspective. And I think so often, especially when it comes to women in the healthcare system, so often we're, oh, don't worry. Oh, it's no big deal. Oh, you're just being paranoid. I have a girlfriend who had a, I think it was like a mark on her arm. And she went to the doctor and she said, I just have a bad feeling about this. And he's like, yeah, you know, I'll run a biopsy, but I'm sure it's fine. I'm only going to do this because your dad was a doctor and he was my friend. And he ran it and it was cancer. It was a melanoma. Wow. And had she listened to him, she wouldn't be here now. And I think what you're sharing is so significant. And I hope that everybody listening really takes it to heart that you've got to listen to your gut when it comes to doctors, even if they say, oh, it's nothing, that you had the strength to say, no, go back again. No, I don't care that that test said that it's not cancer. I want to probe further. And I think that is really, that's inspiring. And I think it's really important and it's significant. So tell me a little bit more about once you had that diagnosis. What did that do to you mentally? We're going to hear about that after the break. And I still need to tell everyone what that thing was when you came into my kitchen that everybody has that you blew my mind and said, this is cancer causing. I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I am here on Loveline sitting in for Dr. Chris. And I will be right back after this break to let you know all the info with Samantha Harris, Emmy Award winning host.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and I am sitting in for Dr. Chris while he is out this week. And I am here with Samantha Harris. You probably know her from Dancing with the Stars and Entertainment Tonight. And she's an Emmy Award-winning TV host and journalist, a certified personal trainer, a nutritionist advocate, a promoter of healthy living, and kind of for our conversation right now, most importantly, a cancer survivor. And she's written an amazing book called Your Healthiest Healthy, 8 Easy Ways to Take Control, Help Prevent and Fight Cancer, and Live a Longer, Cleaner, Happier Life. And one of the things I love about her book is that it's super visual. It's really easy to take the tips. You don't have to read it cover to cover. People are really busy these days. It's sometimes you just like open up a chapter about a topic you want, and even the sidebars are really colorful and there are lots of pictures. It just kind of somehow makes it more approachable with what could kind of be a heavy, overwhelming task to kind of make everything healthier in your life. But Samantha manages to really make it very approachable. So Samantha, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Talk to me a little bit about what happened when you walked into my kitchen, and I'm such a health nut. I think it's really important to share with people what you saw and what you told me, because it kind of blew my mind.
Well, you know, Jen, actually, the fact that this even happened blew my mind, because you are, I mean, I'm usually the healthiest one among my friends, but you really challenge that, because you are so wonderfully healthy with your, I mean, even just in front of her, she's got these, you know, pressed juices and these wonderful things that you input in your body to make sure that you are at your peak performance. But when I walked into your kitchen, it was morning, the kids were playing, you offered some coffee to me, and I said, well, can I see what kind of coffee you have? Is it organic? And you looked at me. You gave me this sort of strange expression. You said, well, organic? Why does it need to be organic?
Because I think of organic, the fruits and vegetables, and I've read the Dirty Dozen, like what we're not supposed to buy because they're too toxic. But it never dawned on me for some reason about coffee.
Right. Well, and it's something, look, whether you're running down to your local coffee spot, which of course is on every corner, or you're filling your mug up at home or the office, you need to make sure that that leaded fuel you're putting into your body isn't creating a toxic environment. And toxicity when it comes to pesticides on produce is something that more and more we're becoming more aware of. But we never think it's in our coffee mug.
No.
But the beans, the way that they are harvested, the bean is grown like a vegetable or a fruit, right? It's harvested, it's planted, it's in soil, it's sprayed with things to keep the bugs away. And if you are not choosing an organic coffee, then you are drinking pesticides. You're drinking possible poison that is really slowly, bit by bit, drip by drip, wreaking havoc on your body on a cellular level. And I'm not trying to be crazy dramatic about it, but this is just the way it is when we're putting this in our bodies. So for me also, I was for a long time trying to switch to decaf. And now I don't only drink coffee on occasion. I love coffee. Love the smell of coffee.
Me too. Me too.
But if the coffee I have in my home is organic, and if it's decaf, you need to make sure that it is water processed, because what tends to happen when they take the caffeine out of coffee is they use chemical agents to strip the caffeine from the bean. And of course, those chemicals that are stripping the caffeine are also stripping the insides of your body. So the water processing is a way to do it, to take out that caffeine from the coffee bean in a way that is not going to add toxicity to your body. So you want to make them organic if you're going regular, and organic and water processed if you go with a decaf.
And I have to say that after you pointed that out, we of course then, you know me, I'm so obsessed. I ordered like 10 different kinds of decaf, water pressed, organic coffees, and we were still, and it was probably, how many months ago was it that you pointed that out to me?
Probably 9 months?
Yeah.
8 months?
We're still, we're trialing right. All of the organic water processed decaf coffees, but it really was mind blowing to me, and it made me also wonder, and again, I'm pretty health conscious, but what else do people have in their cabinets, in their kitchen, in their life that they use on a day-to-day basis that as a cancer survivor, as someone who is you're a certified trainer, you're a nutrition expert, what other things do we have in our homes that we don't realize are so toxic?
You know, when you just think about what's in your pantry.
Yeah.
There's something I like to call liquid poison. As a very close family member was guzzling some tonic water, and I had an opportunity to look at the ingredients, because I thought tonic water was just seltzer, so I was shocked to find that there was high fructose corn syrup in it. And he was drinking 3 or 4 of them in a sitting.
Wow.
And I said, I care about you. You are basically putting liquid poison into your body, because high fructose corn syrup is really toxic. And it is in everything that you can't even imagine you're putting into your body, because it is a cheap, subsidized product that companies can use. And so one of the easiest things, because look, I'm not trying to scare anybody. You know, the reason cancer shook me up in a way that made me reevaluate my health and that of my family's. And I realized that because I had no hereditary link to my breast cancer, it was what you put in, on, and around your body that affects your overall well-being, for better or worse. But you can't have a 180 overnight. You can't change everything in your diet. You can't change everything about your toxic friendships. You can't change everything about the beauty products and the feminine care products that you're putting on and around your body. So small steps. So for food, 2 things. And I'm going to tell you that soon.
After we come back,
yes,
I want to hear the 2 main things that you were just referring to that we all need to know in order to have a healthier life, home, and body. Samantha Harris, Thank you. And we will be right back with that important information.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Genman. I'm not Dr. Chris, but he'll be back next week. You've got me all week. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and all week long, I will be taking your calls. I will be offering you a whole lot of advice about sex, love, relationships, parenting, all that sort of stuff. You can find me on social media at Dr. Genman, two N's on Jen, two N's on man. And I'm here right now with Samantha Harris, who you guys probably know from Dancing with the Stars and Entertainment Tonight and all that sort of stuff. But what you may not know is this Emmy Award-winning journalist has written an incredible book that was inspired by her battle with cancer called Your Healthiest Healthy, 8 Easy Ways to Take Control and Help Prevent and Fight Cancer and Live Longer, Cleaner, Happier Life. And she is here offering some amazing tips about how you can change your life, how you can change your cabinets, how you can live a healthier life and be preventative when it comes to cancer. And she always kind of blows my mind. And it's not just because of the Emmys. It's not just because she's gorgeous. It's not just because she's so poised and amazing, but because the body of knowledge she has is really incredible. And she's an obsessive researcher and always opens my eyes to lots of things. So welcome, Samantha Harris, again.
Thank you.
So you were starting to say, before we took a little break, you were starting to say about the two things that we need to know in our homes, in our cabinets, that are hurting our health.
Well, the two things that you can change,
yes,
are simple. And this is just in, just for one segment, which is the nutrition segment of your life, because to be your healthiest healthy, it's about changing how you approach nutrition, how you approach relationships in terms of toxicity and toxic friendships, and even how, what you're putting on your body and around your body, from your, what's in your beauty bag to your cabinet. So let's just, as you said, let's just talk about what, about the kitchen.
Yes.
One easy change is to walk into your pantry, open your refrigerator, and turn those bottles and boxes around and read the ingredients. If you see the words high fructose corn syrup, chuck it out. Chuck it fast.
Change. Why is that? Why is that so bad for us? What does it do?
So high fructose corn syrup is, first of all, it's a chemical. It's made in a lab. Because of all the subsidies that the farmers get for the corn, it's a very cheap, easy way for them to sweeten up a food, even foods you don't think need to be sweet, because there's high fructose corn syrup lurking in your bread, in your pasta sauce, in your
wow.
ketchup, things that normally you're like, I wouldn't add sugar to that, but high fructose corn syrup is in a lot of that. So it has a toxic effect on a cellular level deep within your body that over time is slowly causing inflammation. Inflammation leads to chronic disease, and chronic diseases include cancer, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, which can, you know, lead to heart disease. So it's a simple change where you're not really going to notice a difference when you're eating your meals. The other biggest change you can make is filling up. You know, I grew up in Minnesota, land of cows. I ate everything from the tongue to the tail, and I kid you not. Well, maybe not the tail, but definitely the tongue and the rump. And so I understand this need for a big slab of meat. We're hearty Americans. We want that big slab of meat on our plate and our potatoes and then maybe a little bit of vegetable on the side. But we need to flip our perspective mm-hmm. by flipping our plate. And that means filling up your plate at every meal at least halfway full with vegetables. And I'm not talking about the vegetables that are French fries, which I know you laugh, but the majority of Americans consider French fries a serving of vegetables.
Wow.
And they're not, unfortunately. Yeah. Yes, they're made originally at some point in time. They came from a potato.
Yeah.
But they're not anymore a vegetable once they're in French fry form. And I will confess, French fries are one of my favorite foods.
And you and me both, sister. Yeah. I love good French fries with salad. Since I'm a vegan, a lot of the time I'll go to a restaurant, and if it doesn't have a lot of options, although that's changing a lot, mm-hmm. I will end up ordering the salad without the cheese and then get the French fries.
Get the French fries. Hey, and if you're making it at home, I'll slice up some sweet potato, because the yams are, you know, chock full of great vitamins. And brush a little bit of extra virgin olive oil, or even better, avocado oil, because you have to watch your temperature with extra virgin olive oil because it can become carcinogenic. That's a whole other topic.
Ooh.
If it's heated too high, so you don't want to don't use extra virgin olive oil to saute at high heat.
Oh, I'm in trouble. Yeah,
so we'll talk.
Okay.
Because we all know extra virgin olive oil.
I did that today. Oh, no.
We'll just be careful. But avocado oil is a great alternative for that.
Can I cook that on a high flame?
High flame.
Because I like to burn everything, which I know is bad for me. That Erica's always saying, you're so healthy, except for that you like burnt food.
That you're burning out all the nutrients. Yeah, you're overcooking. Yeah, overcooking definitely takes a lot of the nutrients out. But what I love to do with the sweet potatoes, I chop it up, I throw a little bit of Himalayan salt, which has some minerals in it because it's that pink salt, you know, and I put it under, you know, I put it under the broiler, or I bake it, and I make my own home cut fries.
Oh, wow.
Baked fries. So those are the two biggest and easiest ways to change up your nutrition. Flip your plate, so fill it halfway full of veggies at every meal, and get rid of that high fructose corn syrup. Two small steps to lead to huge changes.
And did you do this gradually, or because you were diagnosed with cancer and you had to be scared, did you do this in one fell swoop? How did you do it, and what do you recommend people do in their approach?
You know, I don't think anything is lasting when you do it fast.
Yeah.
So for me, the first thing with food was leaning towards a plant-based whole foods diet, just trying to increase my intake of veggies. And I'll tell you, you can eat copious amounts of vegetables and be very full because of all the great fiber and all the nutrients and micronutrients, but not gain any weight. I added fats, healthy fats, avocados, nuts, and seeds into my diet, something I was afraid of because I grew up in the 90s where we were afraid of fat.
Of course.
And so when I added those healthy fats into my diet, I actually leaned out even more, and I wasn't trying to drop weight. If you're watching your weight, you still need to be careful with the amounts of that. But healthy fats are
just for
vital.
Those of you that are listening, she looks amazing. Like, she couldn't be more lean and more amazing. Like, she's like fitness model kind of lean. Whatever she's doing, we all want to be doing.
Thank you. But nutrition is really just half of the battle. Not even half. It's just a small part of the battle for getting to your healthiest life and trying to avoid chronic diseases like the cancer that I had, or type 2 diabetes and heart disease. So the other things you really want to
The thing that I want to talk about with you, because here's what I'm really curious about when we come back. That is, you made reference to the things we put on our body, our beauty products, our skin products. I want to know from you when we come back, since you gave us the two things in our pantry, I want to know the two things that are in our bathroom is where we keep most of those kind of products. The two things in our bathroom that we most need to know about that are hurting us. I'm Dr. Jen Mann, and I will be right back with Samantha Harris, who is an amazing wealth of knowledge about how we can be healthier.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I am a licensed psychotherapist, and I am sitting in for Dr. Chris, and I am here with an amazing guest, Samantha Harris, and we are talking about how you can make your life healthier. You probably know her from Dancing with the Stars, Entertainment Tonight. She is a personal trainer, nutritionist advocate, and of course, an Emmy-winning TV host. And we are talking about her book. But before she tells you the two things, and I really want to know this. I don't know the answer to it, but I want to know. She's going to be telling us about the two things that you probably are putting on your body or in your body that are hurting you and making it more likely that you will get cancer. But before we do that, it is time to slide into the DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding into my DMs, brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It is a big, sexy world. Explore it with confidence. And I am reading a email that was sent to me by Erin. Hi, Dr. Jen. My best friend says she needs space. I'm giving her what she needs instead of constantly texting or calling her. I'm trying to remain positive and patient and do as she asks because I respect her. However, I'm a bit worried. I will never get a conversation to discuss what went wrong. Should I be worried? Is giving space necessarily a bad thing? Can't space sometimes strengthen a relationship in the long run? Thanks, Erin. Well, Aaron, I think you're on to something on all ends. You know, sometimes that space ultimately leads to a deeper understanding and a better appreciation of the other person. But, of course, in order to have understanding, you need to have a conversation. And I think that it's you're in a tough position where your best friend is raising your anxiety level off the chart, I'm sure. So what I would ask for if I were you is for a specific date, to be able to have a bookend of saying, I really want to give you the space. But our relationship is so important to me. I would love it if we could make a date, even if it's a month from now, even if it's 2 months from now, when we can actually sit down. And also to let her know that the reason why you want to know, it's a few things. One is, if you've harmed her in any way, you want to be able to make amends. And two is that you want to learn from your experience. If you've done something hurtful to her, you've probably done it in other relationships and you want to learn from it. This has been presented by Trojan Condoms. It is a big, sexy world. Explore with confidence. And speaking of exploring, I'm here with Samantha Harris, who is an incredible expert when it comes to health and nutrition and preventing cancer from her own experience overcoming cancer. And before the break, we were talking about what are the two things that we have in our bathrooms that we put on our bodies or in our bodies that we need to stop doing in order to make it less likely that we will get cancer.
All right. So, ladies, listen up, okay? I'm talking to you right now. We're talking tampons, pads. Menstrual cups are the way potentially to go because they don't have the cotton that is filled with pesticide residue and bleach. So change up your period routine. Look, we as women, we got to deal with the mess that is the monthly cycle. And we put in our bodies thousands of tampons. Or if you're just a pad girl, well, that's right up next to your very special parts. The skin there is so thin and permeable. So if you think about the cotton fields and how they make that cotton full so that they can have a big heap of it to make into tampons, right? They're adding pesticides, all of these toxic chemicals that we're eventually putting into our body. How does it get so nice and white? Well, yeah, we think, oh, cotton is white, but you know what? Actually, when it's produced and goes through the mills, it gets a little bit dirty. So they need to whiten it back up. And so what they do is they add bleach and other toxic chemicals. So easy switch.
That's a tough one, though. I have to tell you, because we all have our favorite brand.
I know.
We all have our favorite applicator. We all have our favorite thing. So should we just be looking for organic tampons?
You're looking for 100% organic cotton tampons.
This is a tough one.
And when you're going to the pads, also 100% organic cotton, at least the top layer, top sheet, because also adhesive has chemicals. So when you look to the cleaner brands, they're going to help you reduce the toxicity. And then something else that is lurking in your beauty bag. Look, we slap on our makeup. Look, I spent my entire career in a makeup and hair chair, right? Getting all glammed up for award shows and Dancing with the Stars and TV. And I didn't even realize what I was being sprayed and shellacked with day after day. Our skin. I mean, even my now 8-year-old in kindergarten told me, Mom, your skin is your biggest organ. So what we're putting on our face every day or spraying in our hair can really lead to toxicity. So the easiest swap, because I know we're really attached. We're attached to those products,
right? Attached. I know I do.
I do too. Yeah. And it's a hard switch. You don't have to throw out everything in your beauty bag to start. Just start with foundation. And a good way to start is there are three different online retailers who have already done all the vetting for us, because we're all busy. We know. We don't have the time to look up every ingredient and find out if it's toxic or not. So one is called Folane, F-O-L-L-A-I-N, Folane.
Another, and you need to post all this on your social media.
Yes, on Instagram, at Samantha Harris TV, at Samantha Harris TV. I post all this kind of stuff. You can DM me. I will answer, comment. I will answer more of these questions. Folane, Detox Market, and Credo Beauty. All three. They're like Sephora, but they've done the vetting for you of clean, toxin-free makeup. And actually, my book, Your Healthiest Healthy, is a new life, which is, so many people have said, Samantha, I love the book. I've loved reading the book. I've learned so much. I've made changes to how I'm eating and how I'm exercising, getting rid of toxic friendships, but I want a more hands-on approach.
And one of the things I love in your book is that you have a list of the chemicals that we need to look out for when we pick up that bottle, when we pick up the food in our fridge and we read the label, what we need to know and go, oh, you know what? This one we got to replace.
It's called the keep off your bod list. And I go through all of that and so much more. I'm doing now the Your Healthiest Healthy retreats, which people can get one-on-one time group coaching. But I'm really excited about our October retreat because it's benefiting something that's very dear to me, the Susan G. Komen Foundation.
And you've got information about that on your social media. I am Dr. Jen Mann. It has been a pleasure sitting in here for Dr. Chris. And I will be back tomorrow. If you didn't get your calls in, give me a call tomorrow. Till then, find me on social media at Dr. Jen Mann, two ends on Jen, two ends on Mann.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.